This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
This is the Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show. Another hour of the Jesse Kelly Show on a wonderful Monday. We are about to do Medal of Honor Monday. Of course, I'll get to that in a moment. We'll get back to so much of this communist revolution happening in the United States of America. DEI is killing people, emails, all that. So much more still to come. But it's Monday. It's the start of the second hour on Monday. That means it's time to learn about an American hero, someone who earned a Medal of Honor. These people deserve to be remembered. Their deeds deserve to be remembered. And more importantly than that, we have to teach ourselves and future generations what they should be. We have to give people something to aspire to. Otherwise, we can't complain when they find some dirtball they want to be, right? You should want to be Mr. Matt Lewis Urban. He was born in Buffalo, New York. And I'm not sure if he's the luckiest or unluckiest human being to ever wear the uniform. He lived, not to give away the end. He earned 7 Purple Hearts on top of his Medal of Honor. 2 Silver Stars, which that's no slouch, but 7 Purple Hearts. That is, wow. So without further ado, it's a long one. Strap in, learn about an American hero.
Honoring those who went above and beyond. It's Medal of Honor Monday.
Lieutenant Colonel, then Captain, Matt Urban, 112-22-24-14, United States Army, who distinguished himself by a series of bold, heroic actions, exemplified by singularly outstanding combat leadership, personal bravery, and tenacious devotion to duty during the period from the 14th of June to the 3rd of September 1944, while assigned to the 2nd Battalion, 60th Infantry Regiment, 9th Infantry Division. On the 14th of June, Captain Urban's company, attacking at Renouf, France, encountered heavy enemy small arms and tank fire. The enemy tanks were unmercifully raking his unit's positions and inflicting heavy casualties. Captain Urban, realizing that his company was in imminent danger of being decimated, armed himself with a bazooka. He worked his way with an ammo carrier through the hedgerows under a continuing barrage of fire to a point near the tanks. He brazenly exposed himself to the enemy fire and, firing the bazooka, destroyed both tanks. Responding to Captain Urban's action, his company moved forward and routed the enemy. Later that same day, still in the attack near Orglandis, Captain Urban was wounded in the leg by direct fire from a 37mm tank gun. He refused evacuation and continued to lead his company until they moved into defensive positions for the night. At 0500 hours the next day, still in the attack near Orglandis, Captain Urban, though badly wounded, directed his company in another attack. 1 hour later, he was wounded again. Suffering from 2 wounds, 1 serious, he was evacuated to England. In mid-July, while recovering from his wounds, he learned of his unit's severe losses in the hedgerows of Normandy. Realizing his unit's need for battle-tested leaders, he voluntarily left the hospital and hitchhiked his way back to his unit near Saint-Lô, France. Arriving at the 2nd Battalion command post at 11:30 hours on the 25th of July, he found that his unit had jumped off at 1100 hours in the first attack of Operation Cobra. Still limping from his leg wound, Captain Urban made his way forward to retake command of his company. He found his company held up by strong enemy opposition. I'm about halfway through, by the way. Two supporting tanks have been destroyed, and another, intact but with no tank commander or gunner, was not moving. He located a lieutenant in charge of the support tanks and directed a plan of attack to eliminate the enemy strong point. The lieutenant and a sergeant were immediately killed by the heavy enemy fire when they tried to mount the tank. Captain Urban, though physically hampered by his leg wound and knowing quick action had to be taken, dashed through the scathing fire and mounted the tank. Remember, he just watched two guys get slaughtered doing the same thing. With enemy bullets ricocheting from the tank, Captain Urban ordered the tank forward and, completely exposed to enemy fire, manned the machine gun and placed devastating fire on the enemy. His action in the face of enemy fire galvanized the battalion into action, and they attack and destroy the enemy position. On the 2nd of August, Captain Urban was wounded in the chest by shell fragments and, disregarding the recommendation of the battalion surgeon, again wounded but remained with his unit. On the 3rd of September, the 2nd Battalion was given the mission of establishing a crossing point on the Meuse River near Heer, Belgium. The enemy planned to stop the advance of the Allied army by concentrating heavy forces at the Meuse. The 2nd Battalion, attacking toward the crossing point, encountered fierce enemy artillery, small arms, and mortar fire, which stopped the attack. Captain Urban quickly moved from his command post to the lead position of the battalion. Reorganizing the attacking elements, he personally led a charge toward the enemy's strong point. As the charge moved across open terrain, Captain Urban was seriously wounded in the neck. Although unable to talk above a whisper from the paralyzing neck wound and in danger of losing his life, he refused to be evacuated until the enemy was routed and his battalion had secured the crossing point on the Meuse River. Captain Urban's personal leadership, limitless bravery, and repeated extraordinary exposure to enemy fire served as an inspiration to his entire battalion. His valorous and intrepid actions reflect the utmost credit upon him and uphold the noble traditions of the United States Army. That one was actually an email we got back in July. They could make a movie just about this guy's few months in combat. Apparently, half the German army shot him at some point in time, and he just kept going. Checking yourself out of a hospital to hitchhike your way back to the front lines just so you could get back into the action is unbelievable. And I realize that's a story that it happened, but so many guys in combat, understandably, they get what is known as, you probably heard this term before, million-dollar wounds. And the term is simply, it means this: I am wounded. I'm wounded, not that I lost a leg, because no one's going to celebrate that, but I'm wounded bad enough to get me out of this war for the rest of this war, but not so bad that it ruins the rest of my life. That's known as a million-dollar wound. This guy had one apparently every other day and had no use for it. And put yourself in these shoes. The Germans, they were a tremendous army. They really were. Had great generals, great leadership, great fighting spirit. They were dug in. Fighting the Germans in France was a nightmare, and Belgium, a complete nightmare. Because they knew everyone was coming. They had time to dig in. A nightmare. Imagine the living hell of that every minute of every day. Now, juxtapose that with what it would be like to get wounded, and all of a sudden, you're surrounded by pretty nurses, hot food, a warm bed. Your days are spent reading the newspaper, smoking cigarettes, back when everyone did that, playing cards with your friends, hitting on pretty nurses. You want to go out for a beer tonight? And voluntarily, honestly, escaping it. It's not like he was allowed to leave. He's got up and limped his way out and checked out. Nah, my friends are fighting. I want to get back on the action. That kind of American fighting spirit is exactly why this country in its 250 years has a military history that is astounding. The American fighting man is second to none because of that. All right, we'll continue with this ICE deportation stuff next.
He doesn't care if you believe him, but he's right. Jesse Kelly.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show, reminding you, you can email the show. We love your emails, your love, your hate, your death threats, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. Jesse, it seems like every time we start making progress, we get stabbed in the back and kicked in the teeth. The state of Minnesota is in open rebellion, protecting rapists and murderers. Nobody on our side with any real power is doing anything to stop it because they're cowards or because they hate us. Okay, pause on that for a second. That's not true. I'll tell you this. I am a little bit concerned with a couple moves that were just made. I already mentioned earlier that Tom Homan's taken over. I love Tom Homan. That's not an insult to him, but you're changing out leadership. Looks like you might be walking back a little bit when you can't walk back at all in the face of communist aggression. We now find out one of the Border Patrol chiefs, Greg Bovino, great dude, he's being moved to another place. Not fired or anything like that, but again, it looks like you're giving in some. But let's slow down on nobody's doing anything. They're still there. They're still deporting. I should probably say this. If we wake up tomorrow morning and there's an announcement by the Trump administration that they're pulling out of Minnesota, please don't tune into the radio tomorrow because I am going to lose my mind. If that's the I'm asking you, don't even listen. I'll probably die of cardiac arrest on the air tomorrow. I will be that enraged if that happens. But that has not happened. That has not happened. So let's slow down. But to the point. This is why low-T GOPers are so detrimental to our side. And in a lot of ways, low-T GOPers, you know, James Lankford types, those types, they're actually worse than the communists. Traitors are always worse than the enemy. They are. The enemy, the communists, you know exactly who they are and what they want. They're devil-worshipping freaks who hate you and your family and they want to burn down the country. They're pretty open about it. Not like they're hiding it. They're fairly open about it. You got it. I got it. We all got it. But communists pretend they're on our side. Traitors pretend they're on our side. Low-T GOPers pretend they're on our side. I want you to listen to this. This is the governor from Oklahoma. Trying to stay calm. This is the governor from Oklahoma. Oklahoma is one of the reddest states in the United States of America. And in the face of weeks of communist revolution in Minnesota, he went on CNN. Kevin Steele is his name. He went on CNN and he said this.
And so what's the goal right now? Is it to deport every single non-U.S. citizen?
Yes.
I don't think that's what Americans want. We have to stop politicizing this. We need real solutions on immigration reform. And I believe that I've got a great solution, that we should give the states the authority to do workforce permits, right?
In the face of communist aggression, we have governors from blood red states bending the knee on television. This is James Comer. He's a Republican.
And if I were President Trump, I would almost think about, okay, if the mayor and the governor are going to put our ICE officials in harm's way, and there's a chance of losing more, innocent lives or whatever, then maybe go to another city and let the people of Minneapolis decide, do we want to continue to have all of these
retreat? Do you have any idea what's going to happen if we retreat from Minneapolis, if we take one inch back, the communists will be so emboldened, the next city we go to, it will be twice as bad. One inch back. And the communists will begin going crazy like sharks. Have you ever seen video? You ever watched a nature video of a feeding frenzy, a shark feeding frenzy? You know that sharks have these insane noses. It's insane how good they are at smelling blood. They can smell blood in the water, and they swim to it immediately. If you've ever seen one, there'll be a dead whale or something, a big dead thing in the water. Well, sharks will start to come from miles away, and they'll start to feed on it. But sharks, they're very similar to Chris. Their brains are teeny, teeny, tiny. They're just instinctual animals. They have no thinking power whatsoever. All they know how to do is eat and mate. That's all they do, eat and mate. When they get in that situation where there's blood everywhere, there's rotted flesh everywhere in the water, they will start to go crazy in big groups to the point where the smaller sharks, they will be eaten as well. Sharks will emerge from a feeding frenzy with huge chunks in their bodies torn out of them because it just they can't, their minds just, their tiny little minds just break, and all they can do is bite and eat every single thing in their path. That is exactly what will happen with the communist street animals in this country if the Trump administration even shows that they're thinking about taking an inch of a step back. No, forward. More arrests. The communists are telling you what they're afraid of. Feed it to them over and over and over again. Make them eat it. Surge more. All right? All right. We get to some more of this. Now, I will address the Second Amendment messaging in a moment. But before I get to that, let's talk about pure talk. Let's talk about street animal activity in this country. It has corporate sponsorship. There is a chance when you pay your cell phone every month, if you're paying Verizon, AT&T, or T-Mobile, that you are funding these protests. Don't take my word for it. Go look it up. Go look up the causes these companies have given for it. Go look up Black Lives Matter, Verizon. Go look it up. It's time to stop funding it. We can at least starve them of our money, right? It takes 10 minutes to switch to Pure Talk. It's nothing. 10 minutes on the phone. Speaking to an American who speaks English. Dial #250 and say Jesse Kelly. #250, say Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Feeling a little stocky? Follow, like, and subscribe on social at Jesse Kelly Show.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a magnificent Monday. Remember, if you miss any part of the show, you can download it. iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. You know what? We're going to get off this for a minute. Let's do a couple other emails. Jesse, I had the coolest dream on Saturday night. I dreamed I stopped. By the way, I had a wild dream, too. I'll tell you about it in a minute. I dreamed I stopped by your radio headquarters and popped on in to say hi. It was in an old rundown factory. Chris, I love the idea of an old rundown factory. Don't you? With your old rusted gears there and stuff. What do you mean, why? Who would ever think to look for us there? Anyway, it was a secret location. See, Chris? So the communists couldn't find you. I hit it off really well with you and producer Corey. You'd shared some of your delicious snacks, too. We do have some great snacks here. This is where it gets weird. You see, I got along really well with Chris, only he was actually a she. We had a... What, Chris? I'm just reading the email. But sorry, I'm being honest about what the email says. We had a mutual attraction. Chris, good for you guys. I guess my question is Chris secretly a woman? I figured that that might be why Chris never speaks on your show. The name could go either way. Look, I can't confirm or deny it. I can't confirm or deny. All right? If you and Chris, this is a dude who wrote this in. If you and Chris have something special, I think that's really sweet. Chris, being supportive, I think it's really sweet. I mean, maybe you could run for senator in South Carolina. Seems to be their thing. What, Chris? And being supportive and backing him for elected office. So there's that. Another thing is, I had a dream. So I was a spy of some kind. Chris, don't make that face. I was a spy of some kind. I really don't know who I was working for, but I'll tell you, I know you're tempted to say, well, I had to be America. It felt like it was more of a world thing. That'll clarify in a moment. So Ob was a spy with me. All right, so I'm a spy. Ob's a spy. We apprehend a couple Russians, and I remember like it was yesterday that they were Russians. I was in charge of interrogating the dude. Now, I didn't lay a finger on him, right? It's one of those things. I had him tied to a chair. I was just asking him questions and stuff like that. I remember being nice, but I remember looking out the front porch, and there was a woman. She was the Russian spy, and Ob was horribly mistreating her. And she was making her pick the weeds out of the flowers in the front and yelling at her and stuff like that. And I remember thinking that was really bad. But look, torture is very effective. We get information, and I don't know how we ended up on a football field. Now, riddle me this. We're watching the football game, but we're still spies. And there is some sort of a large aircraft that comes down and lands on the football field. But have you ever played Mario Kart, the old Nintendo game Mario Kart? These Mario Kart mobiles, which are the enemy, and I don't know why I knew they were the enemy, but I knew they were the enemy. So, Chris, can I finish my story? The Mario Kart mobiles start coming out of the plane. Ob and me get up, and we're running down to the field to go fight these Mario Karts. Now, this is where it gets weird. And I'm not sure what this was about. I wish I could remember my dreams more vividly. Tony. There was a man in the crowd named Tony. I don't know what he looked like, but I knew him very clearly. And I thought that Tony should be helping fight the Mario Kart invaders, who obviously were working for the Russians or something. Tony wouldn't come help. And I just remember screaming, Tony, get down here. What is wrong with you, Tony? And then I woke up chewing out Tony for not helping. I don't know where we went from there. I do know this. I'm going to try to start making some diet changes on what I eat before I go to bed. I know that. And I also know that Ob mistreats Russian prisoners. So there's that. Jesse. Is it time to call out Trump and his terrible handling of the communists' anti-ICE rope protests? I don't know that he's handled it poorly yet. I won't know until I see where we go from here. If the ICE operations in Minnesota remain and the investigation into the fraud remains, then this is one of the first times Republicans have ever withstood a propaganda operation on this level. And I will give Donald Trump endless credit for standing his ground. The last two times Donald Trump encountered a propaganda campaign at this level, he failed. That's just the bottom line. It was George Floyd. Donald Trump was doing law enforcement roundtables out there, which was unbelievably embarrassing. And then COVID, of course, which was a huge failure. He failed the last two. I believe, maybe this is hope, I believe he learned from that, and he will hold strong. If Trump holds strong in the face of this propaganda effort, Donald Trump deserves our backing and our support. I'll repeat myself again. If tomorrow morning you and I wake up and we find out we're pulling out of Minnesota or pulling back in Minnesota, I'll tell you again not to tune into the radio tomorrow because I am going to lose my mind. But a blood vessel is going to pop in my head, and I might just spike the microphone off the wall and retire. What, Chris? What? That's a very good point, Chris. Jewish producer Chris just said, as we brought up, he is sending Tom Holman to Minnesota. Tom Holman is not exactly soft and cuddly and squishy. You don't send Tom Holman to Minneapolis if your intention is to back off. Here's what I will say, though. Kristi Noem is very clearly going to be pulled back from being the public face of it. Why? She made that most recent shooting with the most recent communist who got killed. She just made a couple dumb statements. Statements like, you can't carry a gun and try to mass murder the officers. You know what sounds bad about that? It makes hardcore Second Amendment people like me, makes it to them, it sounds like, what do you tell me? I can't carry a gun around officers, which of course the guy's a moron. When I carry a gun, which is always, if you see me, I am armed. If you hug me, you're going to feel it. Sorry. I am unbelievably polite when I carry, not just to officers, to everybody. I don't want to harm anybody. If I ever thought a situation was going to get physical, unless I felt like I was in fear for my life or my family's life, I would walk away from it because I don't want to shoot anybody. If you carry a gun and then go decide to start mixing it up with federal officers, that's an unbelievably dumb decision that guy has to own, and it cost him his life. At the same time, you don't want to run out there and muck up the messaging that bad. That's the problem. Tom Holman's going in, though. As I said, if we wake up tomorrow and we're still there, I'm happy. If we are retreating, I'm going to lose my mind. Now, I know you are seeing people in your life who may be cracking. We'll talk about them next.
Missed out?
Catch up.
JesseKellyShow.com.
It is the Jesse Kelly Show on a magnificent Monday. We already did Medal of Honor Monday. We've had a whole bunch of things come across on the show, and you can download it on iHeart, Spotify, iTunes. You can email us, jesse@jessekellyshow.com. So this guy says, Oracle, we're losing the narrative. I personally am at the point where I don't even think you could convince me otherwise. Being my oracle, can you? All right. So, you want to know something that has always hit me? You obviously know I love history and battles and war and all these things. Something that has always hit me, though. The good commanders, meaning the ones, not just they're good at their job, but genuinely they care about their men. They know there will be casualties. Doesn't matter how great the training is. Of course, better training means fewer, but doesn't matter how great the training is. The equipment. Doesn't matter if it's the perfect plan. Perfect plan. Everything thought of. They know as they look at their men before they set off, people are going to die. You're going to lose some. And this doesn't really necessarily apply to big generals and things like that, because oftentimes those guys are megalomaniacs and don't really think in those terms. But think more small unit, a company commander in World War II. We did World War II earlier today. The colonel, the guy who won the Medal of Honor, the colonel. Now, he knows. When he says, hey, first platoon, there's a machine gun nest east. See it? East. It's holding us down. You have to go take it out. People are going to die doing that, and he knows it. He knows it. I mentioned that we are in a propaganda war. I've mentioned it many times before. I will continue to mention it because you have to participate in it. So do I. Not with lies, with the truth. Just tell the truth. Keep putting it out there. When you see lies, swat them down. Put the truth out there. But there will be casualties. Don't let every casualty make you lose your nerve. Speaking of the combat analogies, you know I love reading books about every conflict. I'll tell you a couple of history things I'm working on right now for you history freaks. I'll tell you what's coming next. But before I get to that, multiple times I have read about a commander, whoever it may be, a commander of some kind who loses too many men and just breaks, mentally breaks down because he cares for them. He feels responsible. And when that young man dies on the battlefield and you have to pencil out a letter to his mother telling her son is never coming home again, it hurts. So your aunt on Instagram, she's putting up posts today saying, we have to, there has to be a nicer way to deport people. This has to stop. I know it hurts. We're not going to save them all. Maybe, and man, I'm really sorry if this is you. Maybe it was your pastor yesterday or your rabbi, Chris. But that happens. Maybe he wasn't too forward about it, but maybe your pastor said something yesterday. Well, it's a better way to treat immigrants. Maybe that was a gut punch for you. It would be for me. That'd be the last day I go to that church. But maybe that was a gut punch for you, and I get it. I feel bad for you. We're not going to save them all. Communist propaganda gobbles up the weak and the stupid. It always has. It always will. I've told you before the story about my pastor, my old pastor, my old church. We loved that church. Loved it. One of the few churches that I could count that I've ever had in my life that we looked forward to on Sunday. Not a chore. Looked forward to it. Wonderful. Humble guy. George Floyd dies. He sends out an email that he's going to be attending a What White People Need to Know conference in the area. Of course, it was put on by the race communists. And of course, saw it coming. I tried to prevent it. Saw it coming. Gets up in church on Sunday. Gives a sermon about white privilege. Got up, walked out. I'll never be back. Is that a bad man? No. He's just weak. Stupid. It's hard for people who don't understand fully the evil of communists and communism. It's hard for so many to digest what they're seeing and why they're seeing it. When you get nothing but lies, you don't even have to be a commie to believe in all the bad things. If you just do, quote, normal things, you are an insane communist in practice. I'll tell you this. There's a history guy. Not going to name him. There's a history guy. He's been all over the internet recently, really against this ICE stuff. Now, I never considered him some hardcore lefty, but here's the truth of life. You ready for this? If you read 1,000 books, it doesn't make you wiser if it's 1,000 books filled with lies. In fact, for every new book you read that's full of lies, you're dumber. If you read 1,000 books full of lies, you are infinitely dumber than the guy who never read a book at all. You realize that? How many Americans does that apply to? How many Americans browse the Wall Street Journal for 5 minutes? Lies. ABC News. Lies. I'll just watch CNN for 5 minutes. Lies. Full of lie after lie after lie. just a normal person reading the paper, the dumbest person on the planet, has no idea of what reality actually is. We're not going to save them all. We have to save as many as we possibly can. And that's your job and my job. All right. Dark money and more next.
This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.